everybody.
Hi, friends. Well, from beautiful Salt Lake City, Utah.
It's Thank God I'm Atheist.
The podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
And I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up on the show today, Dan, the LDS Church, the Mormons.
The Mormons.
And their numbers.
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting.
You and I have delighted in several, in many a time on this show, in the Mormons' sorrows and sadnesses, and we might have a small mea culpa to be doing. I don't know. We'll have to see.
We'll see. There's some interesting numbers that are.
We'll be doing some introspection.
Out, so. Yeah, we'll look in deep and dig deep, Dan.
Into our black and empty hearts.
Everybody, like, stick around. It's going to be a reckoning, and it's going to be a sight to see.
Or a sound to hear, because this is an audio medium.
All right. But first, there are some things that happened this week, some news of the week. I'm going to get us started with a story from Italy. This is an amazing story. I love stories like this, where some company puts together a kind of funny-ish ad, right, that has, like, some religious iconography or whatnot, or religious symbols, just outright religious ceremony, like in this one. They have a little fun twist on it. And then the believers lose their goddamned minds.
Uh-oh.
And this one involves a potato chip company. Okay. The ad, I went and found the ad and watched it, because I needed to see what we were really working with here. The article just sort of mentioned some stuff, and I didn't get it. Anyway, so the commercial starts. It sort of establishes that it's in a convent, some sort of religious order, right? There are nuns about, sort of walking through, like, a little cloister area.
Okay.
And then you see sort of an older nun go to the cabinet, and she pulls out sort of this cup or chalice thing, and it's empty. There's nothing in it.
Oh, no.
And then it cuts to, I assume, mass. There's a priest, and he's performing communion. And you don't see what he's taking out of the cup and putting into the young novice's mouth. But when she sort of closes her mouth around the host, supposedly, it crunches. And a surprised look of delight comes onto her face, right? And the priest kind of looks, and the nuns all look at each other, because the host shouldn't be crunching like that, right?
No. And then, everyone knows that the body of Christ is mushy.
Mushy, very mushy. And then you see over sort of off on the side, sitting in a chair, there's the nun from before, the mother superior. She's sitting there, and she's got her hand in a bag of potato chips, and she's chomping away, right? Clever, right? And then the little tagline comes up that says something about, like, oh crap, I can't remember what it said, but it's some, like, funny little line about sort of, you know, heavenly chips or something like that. Right.
Sure.
And, holy crap, Dan, the Giovanni Baggio, head of, a Catholic group in Italy that monitors, radio and television, called the ad blasphemy. So the commercial is outrageous, and it offends the sensitivity of millions of practicing Catholics by trivializing the comparison between potato chip and the consecrated object.
You sound so dumb. Do you know how dumb you sound, Father? But when you call it the when you call your Lord and Savior the consecrated object?
Well, Dan, it wasn't just watchdog groups. Like, no. The country exploded in outrage over this commercial. There's a Catholic newspaper, Avvenire, that criticized the ad in an editorial, Christ has been reduced to a potato chip.
Oh.
Debased and vilified like 2,000 years ago.
No, please make it stop.
Like, okay, really?
Yeah.
This commercial was like the crucifixion of your God, right?
Those tater chips re-crucified Jesus.
I found so many videos online of people like just being fucking outraged about this.
Oh my God.
Italy, I guess Italy has a pretty good outrage machine. I never really knew that. But yeah, potato chips.
But not a great shut the fuck up machine?
No, in fact, very, very much so not. A regulatory group, let's see, it's an Italy's Advertising Standards Authority, the IAP, announced an order for the commercial to be taken off the air.
Oh.
The chip company has 7 days to appeal the decision, during which time broadcasts will continue. And so they're getting all this free advertising plus their paid advertising.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I feel like eating some potato chips.
Love a good potato chip.
I do love a good potato chip. And this commercial, it really sold it. Like, the look on the young nun's face is just like, wow.
That's
some good chip.
That is a crunchy, delicious potato chip. Maybe I'm a Lutheran. I don't know. Do they get potato chips? Who gets potato chips for their Eucharist? Because I want to be part of that.
Yeah, we only got Wonder Bread.
Yeah, Mormons have the weirdest of the things. So dumb. All right. I'm going to take us to Louisiana, which is one of the states that did, you know, we've talked about this many times. New York did it very famously. They created a period of time, a sort of amnesty, a 3-year window during which victims of child sexual abuse could sort of could jump over the statute of limitations and go after their attacker, their abuser.
Yeah. And I think whenever this has come up, we've much applauded.
Yeah,
these efforts.
I don't know. Like it's a little weird to me. If we're going to have a statute of limitations, it's weird to then just be like, time out for that.
Yeah, but a statute of limitations is a weird thing anyway, right? Like,
yeah, I don't feel that I understand fully the legal premise of the statute, like why we have those.
Yeah, I suppose I probably don't either, but it does seem like it's strange to sort of gamify your crime that way, right?
Yeah.
Like you have this clock that's counting down, that if you just get away with it long enough, right? It doesn't change the fact that you did it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It just means that like they're not coming after you anymore.
I got away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that weird, but you know, maybe it's necessary. Anyway, the point is that especially with child sexual abuse, you can't expect someone to come forward quickly about it.
Right.
It's impossible. Like, that's an absurd expectation.
Yeah. And that's what this was acknowledging.
Right.
Yeah.
They say that the average age for victims to come forward and report it is 52.
Wow. And what was the statute of limitations?
Like
12 years or something?
They had until age 28.
The victim did.
Yeah.
Oh,
interesting. So 10 years after they turned 18.
Interesting. So it wasn't measured from the crime.
Not from the date of the crime, but rather from, you know, 10 years from when they become a legal adult.
Interesting. Okay.
So there's that. Obviously churches are very affected by these windows, but you know, by states allowing people to sue well after the fact,
right?
And so they and churches like the Catholic Church are able to mount robust defenses.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that they did was just claim that the just having a window like that is not fair. Basically, I don't know. That's not, you know,
that moving the window is not fair, or just having,
yeah, or the opening the window, oh, just okay. saying, okay. just opening that sort of amnesty time.
Oh, when you can just go. Not fair.
I mean, I don't think not fair is the technical term, is the legal term that they employed.
Doesn't seem to be a good look. I mean, the Catholic Church is having they just have a really hard time with finding the good look.
Yeah,
right. That's, on any of these issues, right? They just look, it's such a bad look to be arguing against it.
Yeah.
Because, of course, but these people should be brought to justice.
To some sort of justice. Yeah. Yeah. Like, literally, basically, the church's claim was that this new law violated their due process rights by taking away the statute of limitations. Meaning, but we thought we got away with it, and then you said that we didn't, and that's not fair. Unfortunately, as we make these jokes, I got bad news. The Louisiana Supreme Court has decided to side with the church.
Oh, God.
Louisiana being a heavily Catholic state.
Yeah.
So there you go. It looks like that's that, and all of those, you know, brave souls that came forward and said, "Hey, I want some justice on this." Louisiana says no.
Well, that also doesn't seem fair.
But the church still likes it, I think.
All right. Yeah. Well, whatever. That really pisses me off. I'm just gonna say.
As well it should.
Yeah. Like, sometimes, wow, okay, if they get to hide behind the law like that, fuck them.
That's only going to get worse for a while. Just everybody brace yourselves. Churches hiding behind the law is only going to get worse for a while.
All right, well, Dan, that's an unfortunate development, but... All right.
Our show is riddled with unfortunate developments, God. Frank. That's kind of our bread and butter.
That should be the name. We should change the name to Unfortunate Developments.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go to Ukraine.
Ooh.
I don't know. Ukraine doesn't come up that often for us.
No, they're in the middle of something.
Yeah. And boy, are they in the middle of something. This is one of the consequences of what they're in the middle of, actually. It's about, and this is coming to us from the PBS NewsHour. I caught this report and was like, oh, wow. Like, too bad it's on TV, right? Because how am I going to talk about it on the show? And then I found the transcript. So,
okay.
Of that that segment. And it has to do with the treatment of non-Russian Orthodox churches in Ukraine by the Russian military and sort of the Russian occupied sections of Ukraine.
But I bet I could guess.
Oh, it's poor. These people are being treated poorly. These are evangelical congregations and Protestant congregations that are being accused of being extremist organizations, right, and being German spies and Russian and I'm sorry, and American spies. Because they're the Russian stance on evangelical groups in particular is that they're American. And the report had like video from some of these groups from their you know, Sunday services. And yeah, they look exactly like what you would think, right? They've got the big stage with like the band and the preacher walking around, and kind of like a big auditorium. But it's not like the front looks nice on camera, but like if you look back at the audience, it's kind of, you know, a little lower quality. You know, like you would expect, if you've ever been in one of these things, one of those big box churches, right? Anyway, the soldiers are just shutting these places down. They're coming through. They are persecuting these Christian groups. And, you know, like we often on the show sort of are very dismissive of the idea of Christian persecution, right? And when it's happening in the United States, I think, Or when the story is based in the United States, chances are that we're right and the Christians are just imagining and making up the whole thing, right? It's all in their little heads. This is a really interesting thing, though, because it's Vladimir Putin, right? Who is, you know, all of these American evangelicals' big hero.
Yeah. Right?
They love this guy. Right.
Yeah. Inexplicably.
Yeah. And
the way these ding dongs choose sides is amazing.
And he's the one who obviously is pushing this. Right.
Yeah.
The irony of the whole thing just like was blowing my mind as they're digging into the fact that, you know, because they started telling the story of how Vladimir Putin is obviously very pro Russian Orthodox Church, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you dumb fucks. Like here's your little hero and he fucking hates what you stand for, right?
Yeah.
And if he had the chance, he would completely wipe you guys out.
Oh. Given half a chance, he would love it.
And anyway, so there have been, well, in the report they talk about that they know of at least 29 Christian leaders that have been murdered in Ukraine by the Russian invaders, and people are rounded up. They actually had video because, you know, these churches will like put up a camera and stream their service, so they have video of soldiers coming in and shutting down a service. And they separate all the men out and take them away. And then they send the women and children downstairs to have their IDs checked. So everybody's like being cataloged and now they're being tracked and they know who everybody is. They fingerprint everybody, take down their addresses in order to sure, it's partly to intimidate them, but also so they know where they are, right? Mm-hmm. I just thought that it was kind of a very underreported story. Like, I had no idea that that would be the Russian official stance, right? Would be to go in and shut down any religion that's not. Like, of course they do. We know how they treat like Jehovah's Witnesses and whatnot in Russia. We've talked about those stories before, but like I hadn't even thought about it in the context of Ukraine and what that would mean. So,
well, and one of the things that we don't talk about, but is very true here and presumably everywhere, is that, you know, churches are a place where people congregate and are sort of brought, you know, there's a lot of bringing people into line with a certain way of political thinking, and so it makes sense to me that the Russians, as just part of their sort of militaristic propaganda campaign, couldn't afford to have those churches stay active.
That's wild.
So there you go. All right. Well, I'm going to take us to another backwards place where a whole bunch of religious people are ruining everything. Arizona.
Yeah. Oh,
Where I think most of our listeners will be aware, many of us will be aware that when the Supreme Court of these United States killed Roe v. Wade and sort of decided to send, well, in their eyes anyway, or at least what they were saying is send the issue of abortion back to the states. Arizona said, hey, we've already got a pretty cool law on the books, so we'll just revert straight back to that.
Right.
And that law was from 160 years ago, before there even was a state called Arizona.
Oh, my God.
It was a territory at the time. Oh, matter of fact, one of our listeners wrote in and pointed out that this was literally like before the shootout at the OK Corral in Deadwood, Arizona, that this particular law hit the books.
This is a territorial law.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's a law, and basically it bans all abortion other than I think the safety of the mother is, and maybe incest. I don't remember. Anyway, everything else is out.
Oh my God.
And when that first started, when that effort first started to just send it back to that law, all these Republican lawmakers were sort of giddy and gleeful about it. But none of them, what they didn't see coming was that nobody wants this.
Right.
Like, even the Republican base doesn't really want this to be the law of the land. And there was so much blowback. There is now a very interesting and surprising category of people who are opposed to this law being enforced.
Okay.
And that category is those Republican lawmakers.
Huh?
A whole slew of Republican lawmakers, including Carrie Lake. Do we remember Carrie Lake?
Yeah.
She's been running to be the U.S. Senator out of Arizona. Yeah. And she's just a lunatic.
Yeah.
Right-wing nutball, like Donald Trump loyalist person.
Right.
And even she opposes the ruling of the the Arizona Supreme Court are the ones who affirmed this this law,
dusted it off.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, so basically, like everybody has turned tail and started to run away from it. State Representative Matt Gress said this decision cannot stand. I categorically reject rolling back the clock to a time when slavery was still legal and we could lock up women and doctors because of an abortion. That's a Republican state representative who said that.
Wow. It's like is it possible that most of these people never really thought they would be able to overturn Roe v. Wade?
I think maybe.
And that they were just, they knew it worked as rhetoric, right? And they thought they just couldn't be opposed to it and stand a chance of being elected as a Republican, which is probably true. Yeah. But it was supposed to
stay a wedge issue.
Yeah.
It was not supposed to actually happen.
Right.
Because this is now the dog has caught the car.
Yeah. This is the biggest be careful what you wish for thing that's happened in politics.
And I don't trust the Democrats as a party to actually like capitalize on this because they're bad at everything. But literally, Donald Trump himself has contradicted himself day to day.
Yeah.
Like literally every other day he's saying, oh no, I think it should be legal and maybe it's the states or whatever. And then other times he's like, I'm the one that killed Roe v. Wade. Everybody should love me for it. Yeah. And he literally can't figure out what angle he's supposed to have.
Well, the thing I've seen the Democrats doing is that they are very quick to remind everybody that this is because Donald Trump This is because of Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was because he got to put people on the Supreme Court, right? Yeah. Like, this is what he set up. It happened. And now we're living with that reality. And that's what I've seen Democrats saying, is just laying it all 100% at Donald Trump's feet, which is a good, probably a pretty good move.
That's really
the only move.
It's just so interesting that that these Republicans are running for the hills on this thing.
Jesus, that's so amazing to me. Well, I mean, it bodes well for the issue long term, I think.
Maybe. I don't know how I hope so. I hope so.
I think it's separating the wheat from the tares. Is that the
or the chaff
or the chaff or whatever? Like, it feels like there's a sorting that's having to happen right now on the right of like, how stupid on this issue do you want to be? Right.
Yeah.
And what the consequences of that are going to be. It's going to be interesting to see. I hate that we're going through it. I hate that women are having to deal with this in so many parts of the country. But it's going to be,
it is what it is.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to continue to be an absolute shit show to watch. So
yes, indeed.
All right. Dan, the Vatican this week. Oh, they issued a document, and they're so good at documents, Dan.
Well, yes. Is it a bull? I love a good papal bull.
I don't think it qualifies as a bull. No. I don't know what they called what this was.
Is it an encyclical? I like a good encyclical.
Dan, it's referred to in this article as a Vatican document. And that's all I have to say about that.
Boring. But
it was meant as a statement on human dignity, Dan.
Oh, good.
When you know when the Catholic Church, you know, starts talking about human dignity, that there are a lot of issues that they might actually have a good stance on. Oh, you know, if they're talking about, you know, the poor, immigrants, right? Vulnerable people broadly, right?
Feeling more and more set up right now.
that maybe this could be a good document. Maybe they found something nice to say about things that everybody could agree upon.
You need to stop making me nervous.
Well, they stepped in it.
They couldn't
help themselves, and they decided to say things like this. They say that the sex a person is assigned at birth is an irrevocable gift from God. Isn't that amazing? What a beautiful gift.
What a lovely sentiment.
Yeah. The sex Thanks. That you were assigned, Dan.
Yeah.
What a beautiful gift. Male. What a beautiful, beautiful gift that is. Let's see. They continue to say things like, any sex change intervention as a rule risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception.
What does that even mean?
Unique dignity, Dan. You're special, Dan.
I promise you, they don't know what that means.
I know they spent 5 years, I think they said, working on this document. They really worked through all. They chose their words very carefully, Dan.
That much I believe.
People who desire, quote, a personal self-determination as gender theory describes risks succumbing to the age-old temptation to make oneself God.
Really? Yeah. You know what? That's what they're going for. I believe that the trans folks are just trying to make themselves God.
It's so offensive.
It's so stupid. Here's the thing. It is literally their argument is gobbledygook. on purpose.
Yeah.
They're literally not, they're trying super hard not to make an actual argument because that would trap them.
Yeah. Well,
In a position.
Well, and they don't have anything to truly fall back on, because if memory serves, the Bible's silent on the issue of like transgender.
How would it have a position? No one really knew, like, that wasn't a part of their society yet. It wasn't a thing.
Right. So this was so easy for them. This was so easy. All they had to do was just be like, well, the Bible doesn't say anything about it. So, okay, we can actually just be good on an issue for once.
Oh, right? Literally, all you have to do is nothing.
Yeah. Just be like, yeah, sure. Yeah, why wouldn't we be? The Bible doesn't have a prohibition on it. This clearly is just our dumb little feelings, right?
Yeah.
Our dumb little ignorance, right? Like,
and if it makes someone else, like, they had the opportunity to say, us just changing a pronoun makes this person happier.
Right.
And feel comfortable and not suicidal anymore.
And
that's so easy.
Right.
You don't have to understand it. You don't have to, like, you don't have to get anything. All you have to do is say he instead of she or she instead of he and let it go.
Yeah. Easy. I mean,
then they would have to be like, well, then they have to wrestle with a whole bunch of dumb, not actual issues like, well, do I have to ordain them? What if they want to be a priest or something? What do I do?
Yeah.
It's very scary, Frank.
That nun wants to be a priest. That was the issue.
Yeah.
Right? That's probably a lot of, like, where it actually all, I mean, it's misogyny probably, really, but
yeah.
And dressed up as what, I don't know, but yeah, it's, I've always felt like they missed an opportunity, that Christianity has just missed a fucking opportunity, on this issue, because, like, you can dig into the Bible and interpret whatever you want to and come up with some stuff about gay people, right? Like, you know,
yeah,
like you can get in there and dig around and here's one verse. We're against the whole thing. Right.
Not that the Bible actually understood the concept. Like, the Bible has no concept of homosexuality.
Correct.
It has no concept of sexuality as a concept. It just has an idea of, like, certain very specific sexual acts.
Right.
Not being okay. And that's largely because of, like, the power dynamic.
Mm.
Like, you can't, like, a man has, the man has to be on top and he can't be made to be receiving. Mm. And like, it's all very stupid. Anyway.
Right. But you can see how maybe they got a little confused, right?
Sure. Sure.
With the trans issue, they didn't have to be.
Yeah.
And I hate it, but it's also, it's kind of amazing that they just could not fucking help themselves. Right.
No.
And obviously they haven't been able to help themselves on the issue for quite some time. Why should it surprise us that they issue a document like this? But let's all just remind ourselves real quick. I do want to not just, you know, move on and forget the fact that, I don't know how many episodes ago, but not too many, we were talking about how cool the Pope is because he has, like, trans people over for lunch every once in a while.
Yeah.
Right.
And washes their feet or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, cool. I guess he's kind of nice to those specific people.
Uh-huh.
Right. But, like, when his church is making a statement on the issue, he's a dick. So,
in fairness to him, everybody screamed at him when he was nice to a couple of trans people. Oh, it's so tough
when everybody screams at you, especially when you're the Pope.
Yeah.
It's the last thing you want.
Yeah, it's true. All right, I'm going to bring it all back home here to Utah, where there is a, you know, we've talked about this lawsuit that James Huntsman, brother of former Utah governor John Huntsman, and heir and co-heir to the Huntsman billions, there's just that whole family is, you know, they're billionaire family.
Right.
Well, James Huntsman has left the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, and is now suing them to get his tithing back. Basically, he said that they committed fraud.
Mm-hmm.
They said that his tithing money was only going to go to charitable things.
Right, to run. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Run the church and charitable things.
And then they went and built a mall. Yeah. And have a lot of other for-profit operations that it has now been revealed were done basically with, well, here's the church would say it was done with the gains that they got by investing the tithing money. So it wasn't the tithing money itself. That's still just sitting there earning more money.
Right.
It was with their gains. So like how could, anyway, under any normal circumstances, that would be something that the courts would decide.
Right.
But the courts have been very reticent to decide this at all. It was, I think it was dismissed at one point, and then it's back. And because he appealed, and the appeals court said, no, you actually have to try this thing. So now it's going to be tried, and what it is shaping up to be as a lawsuit is basically a question of can the courts, because the argument that the church is making, and you read this article too, so correct me if you think I'm wrong, but the argument that the church is making and all of the other churches that filed amicus briefs on their side is just that, no, the state doesn't get to look at us at all, doesn't get to review what we do. They give us money. We do whatever the fuck we want with it. And fuck you for asking.
Right.
Is basically their position.
Yeah.
So a lot, I think, you know, a lot more than one dude getting back whatever 10% of whatever he paid them.
He's asking for $5 million back. So,
yeah, yeah, a lot more than that is on the line here. I just feel like here's what I feel like. I worry that in the current legal climate, where, you know, our courts are stacked to the gills with, frankly, incompetent judges going all the way up the ladder to the highest court in the land.
Yeah, like which way are they going to side?
He could end up getting like immunity for churches enshrined in our jurisprudence.
Well,
like absolute immunity. He,
sure.
In pursuit of $5 million that he definitely doesn't need.
Right.
He could end up making it so that like there's a Supreme Court ruling that says we don't get to touch churches.
What would change in practice, Dan?
Okay. You're not wrong.
What would change?
Okay.
Like he's not, in my opinion, he's not risking that much for all of us because we're already there. Right.
I don't know if I'm laughing or crying right now.
If this ruling actually came down, like, what would fucking change? Right. Like we give them everything. We have laws on the books that they're not supposed to preach politics over the pulpit. Right.
And we just don't enforce it.
We don't enforce it. Right. Well, it's not laws against doing that. It's tax, you know.
You lose your tax exempt status.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can do it. You can be a church and preach politics and, you know, pick candidates and tell your people how to vote as much as you want to. You just can't, supposedly, you're not supposed to be tax exempt at that point.
Right.
But
that hasn't been enforced literally at all.
has it ever been enforced?
I don't think so. And I don't know if the IRS has ever actually taken away, like, they know the consequences of revoking a church's tax exempt status.
And so it's just like, so I don't know, like, you go for it, you know. That's my stance at this point. Maybe is it the most strategic time to do it? Yeah, probably not. But like, you know, he's got an axe to grind. He has an amazing axe to grind for him to just keep dig, like, the legal fees that he must be facing at this point, because to go up against the Mormon Church with their endless billions of dollars, right? Like, yeah, okay, he's from a billionaire family. He I guess he's the guy to do it, but
he's the only guy to do it.
Yeah,
no one else could manage this. Could even have gotten this far. And he hasn't even had a trial yet.
It's clearly not for the $5 million. He wants to fucking make a point.
Yeah. Well, and if
make him hurt
a little. And if he wins, I imagine a class action suit
will come up. It'll be open season at that point.
It'll be crazy.
And it won't just be the Mormons people at watch that point.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's true, too.
And that's what everybody's afraid of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you would like to chime in on this or any of the things that we've talked about today, friends listening at home, you can do so by writing into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 424-666-8442. Stick around. There's more show coming up.
So, Frank,
Dan,
we've played clips from self-proclaimed prophet and sort of failed Elvis impersonator Kent Christmas before. I don't know what he is. He is a weird dude. He's too old now. He's an old guy. I feel like he's maybe, you know, he's just one of these little firecrackers, one of these little balls of wicked energy. Anyway, he has said a lot of, like, just a cuckoo bananas stuff in the past. And of course, like all of the ding-dongs in the world of religious ding-dongery, he is just a political element at this point. And he has had some things to say about what he thinks, just predictions, things that he knows God will be doing in the upcoming season as we zero in on another American election cycle.
Okay.
So here's him talking.
Nice. And I think what we're getting ready to see prophetically in the earth and in this nation is God is going to do something supernatural that's going to bring light and expose all of this stuff we've been through. And I want to encourage listeners, don't let the media sway you. Don't let the lies of the enemy deter you. God is raising up a remnant that is anointed and powerful, and we're going to win this battle. And I don't think politically we're going to win it just through natural means. I believe that God is going to step in, hold up our arms, and begin to release an anointing that deals with some of these wicked people. I believe the Lord really spoke this to me, that God is going to begin to remove some of these people independently of anybody else doing it. They're not me voted out. I believe you're going to see some people begin to die, and God is going to replace them with godly men. And so I'm encouraged.
They're going to die, Frank.
I'm sure.
I mean, how frankly, it just feels disingenuous when the current president is 80, 100 years old to predict that the enemy is going to die. Like, he knows he's got a decent chance on that one. I think he's just playing the odds at this point.
Yeah, I mean, well, the odds are actually against that prediction. The actuary table shows that Joe Biden has at least 8 more years of life.
Really?
Yeah, I looked it up, actually. I was actually curious.
How do you figure that?
Well, you go to the actuary table for men, uh-huh, and then you go and you find what's the life expectancy for a reasonably healthy human male who's, uh-huh, what, he's 81, right?
I don't remember.
He's 80 something. He's something, right? I looked it up and I looked it up on the Social Security's actuary table. Just out of curiosity one day, and I'm pretty sure it was at least 8 years.
Okay.
That you would expect an 81-year-old male who's in reasonable health. And what I would say about Joe Biden is he seems to be in really good health.
He does.
So the man.
Unless there's something we don't know about.
Yeah. Now, there's obviously risks of mental decline, but he doesn't seem to be showing anything like that. But anyway, just to say, like, the money is on Joe Biden if he gets reelected, surviving. Yeah.
Okay.
Living out the 4 years. But anyway, back to Mr. Christmas here.
Uh-huh.
It's
Christmas every day.
When has God ever done any of these things? Like, I love these predictions that just keep coming out of these people's mouths.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, the eclipse didn't rapture anybody, right?
Boo.
And that I don't know what Christmas had to say about that.
Right.
But like, that was a big thing. People were like, oh, the eclipse and rapture and blah, blah, blah. Didn't happen. They talk about the rapture happening on any specific date. It never happens. Right. No. And it's just like, when do they start smelling their own bullshit?
Yeah.
Like,
I still have a reminder in my phone somewhere. My phone, I did it literally when Hank Kuhneman, I did it on air. Some of our listeners may remember. I had Siri set a reminder that I should make fun of Hank Kuhneman for getting his prophecy about Trump being president again wrong. So if on January 21st of 2020 of next year, Trump is not re-inaugurated, I will still have that
good
ready.
Well, that's one that's just been waiting. You've been sitting on that one. That's great.
I mean, Hank Kuhneman predicted that he would be that Biden wouldn't serve out a full term. They've all backed off of that. All these prophets that were absolutely certain that you know a recount was going to happen, and then it was going to be Trump, and then this would happen, and then that would happen, and none of them have come true, and they keep moving the goalposts over and over and over again.
How do people not see it? I can't. How do people keep following and listening?
I think it's just literally a waterfall of constant new predictions, and nobody has time to think about the ones that didn't come true. Because if any of them come true, you know, you do 380 prophecies,
right?
And 381st one actually comes true, and then you just scream and shout about that for the next year and a half, and that's all you ever say is that all of my predictions come true because this one is I proved
right.
Anyway, listen, much better news. We have some wonderful things, people who wrote into us this week and called into us. So I will start by reading from Hannah, who wrote in and said, "Hey Frank and Dan, I was never Mormon, but I have some friends who are deep believers. This whole time, I thought the church was complete whack, harmful, and useless bullshit. But I recently had a full 360-degree conversion." That means you go around and you're back to where you started, but that's okay. "I struggled with insomnia, and no amount of sleeping pills can help. One of these restless nights, I threw on the latest General Conference just for shits and giggles. That's Mormon General Conference for them, as you, for those of you who have lost that plot. Honest to God, I was sound asleep within 10 minutes. It's my new secret weapon. They have perfected the art of using so many words to say nothing at all. And for that, I can say thank God for General Conference. Of course, I throw on TGIA in the morning to actually hear something engaging and beneficial.
Yeah.
I love it. They are, their drone, their cadence, it probably should be prescribed for sleep, as a sleep aid. It's old men just talking way too slowly and literally like about nothing.
And then the Lord, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's remarkable.
Brothers and sisters.
The side effects may not be worth it. I'm not sure. But thanks for writing that in, Hannah. Amanda wrote in to say, hi, Frank and Dan. I've listened for a little while and wanted to share a funny story. My husband and I were raised evangelical. As adults, we've run, not walked, away from the church. We are raising our kids without religion and explicitly identify as atheist. Recently, I was driving the kids home from school and daycare, and I asked them to look for hotels. We were refinishing the floors and needed to be out of the house for a couple days. My four-year-old pointed out the window and said, is that a hotel? Six-year-old replies smugly, no, that's a church. And then looks at me, Mom, what's that T on top? Needless to say, I held my breath for the entirety of Easter brunch with my evangelical parents, hoping my kids didn't ask why Jesus was nailed to a T.
Or just holding your breath, waiting and hoping the topic comes up.
Yeah, hoping the topic comes up. Yeah. Ask grandma about that. That'd be funny.
That's what the uncle's job is for.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We have a voicemail, do we not?
We do indeed. This is from a listener named Steve. He explains himself really well. Let's just have a listen.
Great.
Hey, Frank and Dan, this is Steve. I was listening to you an old episode as I was out doing my stoned evening walk, as you do, listening to Thank God I'm Atheist. And you guys were talking about how missionaries, you'd think they'd know something about the product that they're selling, but they really don't. And then you added that that's kind of not a requirement. I'd go as far as to say that's specifically what they want, is people that don't know anything about the product that they're selling. They want people to get out and push. They don't want people to steer. In fact, Mormons have that hymn, you know, put your shoulder to the wheel, and they love that shit. Get out and push. Do your part. Don't do any questioning. Don't do any thinking. Don't do any steering. Just get out and push. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Talk to you later.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I had never thought of that hymn in that context.
Just do the work.
Yeah.
And please, for the love of God, stop thinking about it.
And don't ask questions.
Ugh, we hate it when you do that. That's the worst. Please. Don't. Your brain is, that's not what it's for. Religion with your heart, not your brain.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, we have Mitchell who wrote into us. Now, Frank, our listeners will recall that you went on a bit of a rant last week vis-a-vis ageism and sort of how we like to scapegoat boomers and all this stuff. And Mitchell has written in to say that that affected him. He says, hey, guys, I've been listening for years and love your show. It seems you always try to stay kind, even when talking about difficult and infuriating things. And I really appreciated this when you were talking about people's tendency towards ageism. I'm very guilty of this. I even catch myself using words like olds and geriatrics as slurs. This has caused me some cognitive dissonance because on the one hand, it's infuriating that of the dozen or so boomers that I have relationships with, it seems to a person that they refuse to recognize how privileges of cheap education, property, and debt they enjoyed when they were my age in their 30s has caused systemic issues for those generations after them. And they use whatever power they have to preserve those advantages for themselves and ignore the people it screws over. On the other hand, I enjoy privilege from other kinds of systemic inequalities, and I've never been in any rush to give up opportunities that I've had, at least in part because I'm white and male. In not so many words, you reminded me how it's productive to get angry about systems, not at people, however ignorant the people are. Low-effort attacks on what entitled assholes boomers are do nothing but further entrench them in their entitlement and willful ignorance, allows them to play the victim, and alienates the people from those generations who do acknowledge their privilege. I guess it's time to stop ignoring my cognitive dissonance and start unpacking my prejudice. Thanks again. Yeah. We all have our blind spots. It's always good to challenge those.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do we have some folks to thank?
We do indeed, Dan. We have a patron on Patreon that has advanced in the priesthood. Moved Ooh. From a teacher to a priest, Dan.
Ooh.
And this listener is Taru.
Oh, Taru, thank you so much. One of our faves.
Yeah, thank you very much. And if you'd like to join all of our wonderful patrons in supporting the show, you can do so by going to our website, thankgodimatheist.com, and clicking on the support tab. And there's some options there. And then, as always, Dan, we have our top donor to thank, our Lord and Savior, Davis!
More show coming up. Well, Frank, here we are. Mormonism still exists. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I do. I'm aware.
In spite of all of our efforts, there is still Mormonism. And one of the things that we often like to talk about is how Mormonism, a lot of the stats that we see about Mormonism is that it's on the decline.
Oh, and I love seeing that stuff.
Oh, and we do. We get a little giddy about it.
Yeah.
Because we don't like Mormonism and we want it to stop.
Yeah.
And we also, we do like ex-Mormons like ourselves, and we want there to be a lot more of them. So when we talk about, you know, the Mormon Church hemorrhaging adherents, that feels good to us.
Yeah. I like your point that it's sort of the celebration of there being more of our community.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all we want.
Is it too much to ask?
We just want more,
universe?
More ex-Mormons in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ex-evangelicals and ex-everythings. Here's the thing. There a recent article by Jana Reese, who is a Mormon, but writes about Mormonism in a blog and has a, you know, she and has that beat for religious news service, and so she's a journalist.
Yeah, and a good one.
And a good one, yeah. One that we respect. Mm-hmm. She was like, she basically wrote this article that was like, look at the numbers, and she called out sort of two sides of people that email her and or tweet at her every time she does one of these articles. One side is Mormons who are like, no, it's the outlook's rosy and everything's perfect and shut up. Mm-hmm. And the other side is us getting a little too gleeful about like, ha ha, they're, you know, Mormons suck and they're losing all of their people. And what the article eventually points out is, and she does spend a little too much time on on the divide between those people. I think she is sick of getting your tweets and is just done with it and spent a lot of ink on that. And then she basically just said that Mormonism is growing a little bit.
Very little bit, but a little bit, yeah.
It's slightly, like, when you parse it out, Mormonism is slightly outpacing population growth.
Oh, was it that way? I thought it was slightly not keeping up with.
No, it is. Well, here's the thing. Her numbers are that Mormonism is slightly outpacing it. Hmm. However, her numbers do not take, they only take growth into account. They don't take people dropping out into account.
Right. Because
the Mormon Church doesn't do a good job of reporting that. And people, well, no, what ends up happening is people who stop going, of the people who stop going and stop calling themselves Mormon and stop, like, being Mormon, a small percentage of them write into the church and go through the bullshit process and say, hey, I officially don't want to be Mormon anymore. But most don't.
Right.
Most just disassociate themselves and call it good. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be reflected in the numbers. That loss is not going to be reflected in the numbers. So when you look at, like, self-reported attendance in church and adherence to church, their numbers are going down as a proportion of the population.
Okay.
But the growth numbers that the church gets to report are ever so slightly outpacing the growth of the population as a whole. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think the more interesting...
It disappoints me, though, Dan. That's the problem.
And it should. It should disappoint you.
I don't know about our premise anymore here, Dan.
I mean, I get it. But I think the takeaway is much more about... the takeaway is a question about why are we so gleeful when we find that the church of our childhood is dying, or when that is what it feels like. Well, when it feels like it's losing all of its members.
It caused us so much pain.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, it's not even revenge. We just want it gone.
Right.
It's like, we don't want other people to feel that pain. We don't want it to continue to be able to inflict that ugliness on other people.
Oh, really? No, mine's more spiteful.
Oh, you're just spite.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Mine's fair. Definitely, like, I mean, yes, okay, I guess when you say it, yeah, okay, I don't want other people to go through it either. But, like...
But yeah, the spite is there too.
But like, I feel something that feels good, right? Mm. When I think about them sort of slowly losing members and the church leaders, because they know the real numbers, right?
Yeah.
Them sitting there wringing their hands over, what do we do to get more members? Why is it going the wrong way? We're the true church. Right.
You think the people at the top actually believe that? Maybe they do. A lot of them do.
The Oaks. He's a believer. Russell Nelson is a true believer. Like these guys, those ones, I don't doubt them. I always kind of had something in the back of my head about Hinckley. Of just like, I think he believes it, but not in like the dumb Mormon way, right? Yeah. But he believes in the life. He believes in the people and, you know, and yeah, he believes it, but not like fucking Nelson. Nelson is and Oaks, they're scary people to me, right? Anyway, that's kind of beside the point. No,
and a bunch of names that many of our listeners have no idea who the hell we're talking about.
Sorry, guys.
Just picture all of the old people.
Yeah.
old men. Just
and
picture
some
them.
Some come off a little bit nicer than others.
Yeah.
Hinckley was a likable character. That's what I'm saying.
Indeed, he was. He was. I just think the one thing that I wanted to remind us of in this conversation was that regardless of the trend line, regardless of whether, religion gains or loses traction.
We're still right? Is that where you're going?
Our issues are the same. I wasn't going to we're still correct. No, I feel like we are. I feel pretty confident in the fact, in the idea that we are more righter than they are.
Absolutely. You can. We've always got that.
But what I was trying to get at is that, like, the things that we're fighting for, the things that are meaningful, the issues that we face,
mm-hmm.
those are the same. So, I guess it makes sense for us to celebrate. What I don't want us to do is get as tribal as they get. I don't want us to be so into our own group that, you know, we start defending leaders who are indefensible, or we start hating the other because of their membership in another group. Yeah. I don't want to be them.
No, I
don't like who they are.
Right. But I want us to get to the point where we're not a group.
Yeah.
Right. We're already not really a group, but I want it to just be not. We're not a group because it's not an issue. Right.
We don't feel like
they have to seek each other out because there's so many of us.
Right.
Right. That like, and so many people are rational thinking, and so many people have sort of seen the light with regard to organized religion that it's just not.
It's not how it works.
Who cares? Oh, you're atheist? Woohoo. Big deal.
Right. Right. You know? That's the normal. That's the, that's the baseline.
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, that tells me nothing. It would be great to get to the point where someone says I'm atheist and that still tells me nothing about them.
Yeah.
Because as of right now, unfortunately, we are a group.
Yeah.
And the reason that we're a group is because we're marginalized, is because we are, we have to fight for rights, and
right.
we have to fight for recognition and stuff. So
that's the unfortunate part, but also fortunately we're a group too.
Yeah. And a great group.
Yeah.
Like I love us. I love the people that I meet when I go to the American Atheist right. Convention. And I love, you know what I mean? Like I think there's wonderful things in our group, but also like, yeah, I look forward to the day when we're not all like, let's huddle together. Maybe we can stay warm if we huddle together.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, Mormons aren't dying. They're not going away anytime soon. I'm sorry about it. So everybody just gear up to keep having Mormons and religious people in general.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Alas. All right. Well, hey, that's it for the show. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you would like to yell at us about anything that we've had to say or congratulate us or whatever, please feel free to do so. Podcast at thankgodimatheist.com
or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist, and click the like button.
And if you'd like, join one of our members-only lounges. Just go to our website, thankgodimatheist.com/members-only.
Thanks so much to the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their music.
And thanks to Gordon Johnston for the use of his music.
And thanks to all y'all for tuning in. We sure do appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.